Well, welcome everyone. It's exactly 5 o'clock. So thank you all for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are here. It's Thursday, the third Thursday of May, May 20th, 2021. Amazing. And this is our World Peace Diet Circle third Thursday call. So I'd like to thank all of you for joining us on this call. I don't have any, by the way, also we will be joined a little bit later, pretty soon, by a wonderful person, Reverend Carol Saunders, and she'll be giving us some of her, gosh, people are coming in so fast here, she'll be speaking to us about her perceptions of the vegan movement and so forth, and she's a unity minister. And so I think it's really wonderful that she's joining us. Okay, I'm letting in some more people. And so we'll do that in a few minutes after the after we have our initial meditation time. Okay, so let's see here. And otherwise, hope you're all doing well. This is, it changes all the time in our society right now. This is a really amazing time. All right, so I think it's about 3 minutes past the hour, and I'll go ahead and start, I think, with the meditation. I'm trying to see exactly who's here. It's kind of a little bit hard to tell. I'm not used to, sorry for blabbering on here. I'm not used to this, not having a computer, but okay. Well, I guess we can go ahead and get started. All right, so thank you all for joining us, and we'll go ahead. I'd like to begin our time by taking a few minutes to just come together here in this space, this beautiful shared space we have of the vegan vision of a world of compassion and harmony for all living beings. I think I'm going to put another book here. That might get a little bit better. So let's take a few moments. And, yeah, I see, oh, I got one more person coming in. If you have any questions about the sound quality, it looks like you can hear me okay, I'm hoping. I could also, let me see, tell me if this is better. This is an idea. Okay, is this better, maybe? Are about the same. I'm not sure. Anyway, I'll go ahead and do it this way. Maybe this is a little better sound. All right, so let's take, I think everybody's here. Oh, yeah. You can hear my breath. Oh, okay, so maybe. Okay. Okay, here we go. So let's just take a moment and bring ourselves into the shared space that we have of World Peace Diet Circle, which is dedicated to the healing of all of our relations and to creating a field of healing, of awakening, of connecting with our true nature, and to including animals and all living beings within the circle of our compassion and concern. So we're especially grateful right now for this opportunity to be together and to share our ideas, our concerns, our aspirations, and our insights, and to learn from each other and to be ever growing in our capacity to be effective advocates for all living beings, for human animals and for non-human animals, and to understand more deeply the power of what veganism actually is. So, let's see here. I'm going to I think we've got a few people maybe that are unmuted. So, anyway, so we give thanks also for all of the other activists in the world, activists for the liberation of animals, for human liberation, for peace, for spiritual awakening, and people who are working to improve themselves, to purify their consciousness, and to remove as best they can the blinders that we seem to all have being raised in the world today, the way it's structured. And there's so much that we have to be grateful for, and there's so much that we can learn. So we give thanks for all the animals, for their terrible suffering at our hands, and their teaching of us to open our hearts to a higher way of living, to open our hearts to the golden rule. And I feel like I should correct what I just said. I certainly don't give thanks for their suffering, but give thanks that more and more people are becoming aware of their suffering, that we can put an end to this unnecessary violence. So we also hold in our hearts a vision of this beautiful earth at peace and in harmony. We see the earth now from a higher perspective as one living organism without separating border lines, without the conflict that pertains to human activities. And we see the earth as a beautiful shining jewel with infinite possibilities for being a school for learning, an amazing field of celebration and learning, the benefit of all living beings, for animals and for humans. We give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human life to use our capacities, our intellects, as well as our spiritual sensitivity to create a world of peace and freedom and justice, sustainability for all living beings. So just connecting with our breathing now, and with every exhalation, we come into the still center where we are and allow a feeling of loving kindness to radiate from our heart. With every exhalation, we radiate peace from our heart, breathing and radiating peace and harmony. We see this radiating from our heart as ever-expanding spheres of light, radiating out into our world, loving kindness and benevolence, the blessing to all the human beings here, all the animal beings, all living beings, beings both visible and non-visible. We hold all living beings in our heart with love and appreciation, benevolence and goodwill as we breathe together, filling the infinite web of relations with the truth of the infinite love that is the source of all life. Just activating every cell in our being at this moment. That's invigorating every thought, word, and deed, and is rejuvenating our aspiration, reminding us of the truth of our purpose and of what we are beyond merely the material level. So breathing and radiating love into the infinite web of relations. Breathing and radiating compassion to the infinite web of relations. Knowing that compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And we are the hands and the voices of compassion during our daily lives. We breathe compassion into the world. Breathing and radiating compassion. Connecting with the truth of the light of compassion that shines always in our heart. Now we radiate joy into the world with every exhalation. From the infinite source of joy at the heart of the universe that dwells also in our own heart, the core of our being, our true nature, is joy that needs no reasons in the outer world, the joy of being, the joy of appreciating life, celebrating all around us. And within us. So filling the whole web of relations with joy with every exhalation. And finally, we breathe peace. Radiate peace into lives and consciousness, all living beings. We exclude no one from our loving, benevolent wishes, from our compassion, our joy, and our peace. There's no one outside our sphere of concern. But breathing and radiating peace and harmony, giving thanks for the truth that beyond the outer appearances, there's a deep, abiding ocean, peace and harmony that is the core of all life, underlying all the waves that we see on the surface. And that's always available to us in consciousness. The peace that also needs no reasons in the outer world. The peace of our true home. So we give thanks now as we begin to return to our shared time together and give thanks for each other, for all the people working diligently to bring the light of kindness and love into their relationships, into all relationships, to bring the light of forgiveness, and sending our blessing to all the beings we refer to as animals. We send our apologies also on behalf of humanity. We give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human life to grow in wisdom and compassion and awareness. And for this moment that we have and this time we have to be together. And so it is. Okay. Hi, everyone. Hi, Julie. So we're waiting a few more minutes before when people are arriving. And so another couple of minutes. I don't have my computer. I'm using a little iPad. My computer's being repaired, so a little different tonight. But Should go okay, I think. So just enjoy a few minutes here together before we start in a couple of minutes. Well, there's Internet. Hi, Internet. Good to see you.
Great to see you, too.
Good. So what part of Wyoming are you in now? Did you say you're in Cheyenne?
No, Casper. I keep changing my Zoom subheading, and it keeps changing it back. Yes, Casper, Wyoming.
Casper, right. Great. I remember Madeline and I went to Casper, Wyoming years ago and gave a workshop. And they gave a concert, actually. Yeah, it was a nice little town.
It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. Yeah. I love it. It's, and there's actually some vegans here. There's other vegans. I've met some vegans.
Oh, my gosh. In Wyoming?
Yes. Wow. And we have a natural grocer's that has all kinds of good vegan products. It's amazing. Yeah. It's.
Wow.
I think it's going to change. I think it's going to – and I might be a part of that. But, yeah. Yep.
I'm sure you will be a part of it.
Oh, I'm wearing my advertising shirt.
Right. Yeah,
that wearing all my vegan shirts around town.
I know. I remember driving through Wyoming so many times, and it looks like mainly cows. But I know there's much more.
Cows around here. I don't know where they are, but they're not around here. I haven't seen any. I've seen wild turkeys, and I've seen antelope and squirrels, but I haven't seen any cows yet. Oh, and a deer. Apparently a deer comes into our neighborhood. With the horns and everything, but I haven't seen him.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
My neighbor sent me a picture of him. He's beautiful. Yeah.
That's awesome. So it sounds like even in Casper, there's some wildlife. That's great. All right. So let's see here. Okay. Well, welcome, everyone. It's exactly 5 o'clock and, here in California, so I guess that's 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock, wherever you happen to be. I know we have usually Dottie comes from England, so it's about 2 a.m. where she is. And let's see, I'm just letting people in here. It's great to see your faces and feel your presence. And so I'll go ahead and get started. I'm letting people in. So thank you all for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are here. It's Thursday, the third Thursday of May, May 20th, 2021. Amazing. And this is our World Peace Diet Circle third Thursday call. So I'd like to thank all of you for joining us on this call. I don't have any I don't have the usual options I have to do chat and see participants very easily. So I'm doing my best here. My computer is in for repair, which has not happened I've had this computer, MacBook laptops for, I don't know, almost 20 years, I think, and I haven't had to send one in yet, but this is the first time. So I'm on a little iPad, and I think I've got to figure it out here, but if there's any problems, just, press *6 to unmute if you have any questions or comments anytime during the call. By the way, also, we will be joined a little bit later, pretty soon, by a wonderful person, Reverend Carol Saunders. And she'll be giving us some of her – gosh, people are coming in so fast here. She'll be speaking to us about her perceptions of the vegan movement and so forth, and she's a unity minister. And so I think it's really wonderful that she's joining us. Okay, I'm letting in some more people. And so we'll do that in a few minutes after the after we have our initial meditation time. Okay, so let's see here. Come on. And otherwise, hope you're all doing well. This is It changes all the time in our society right now. This is a really amazing time. All right, so I think it's about 3 minutes past the hour, and I'll go ahead and start, I think, with a meditation. I'm trying to see exactly who's here. It's kind of a little bit hard to tell. I'm not used to, sorry for blabbering on here. I'm not used to this, not having a computer, but okay. Well, I guess we can go ahead and get started. All right, so thank you all for joining us, and we'll go ahead. I'd like to begin our time by taking a few minutes to just come together here in this space, this beautiful shared space we have of the vegan vision of a world of compassion and harmony for all living beings. I think I'm going to put another book here. It might get a little bit better. So let's take a few moments. And I see. Oh, I got one more person coming in. If you have any questions about the sound quality, it looks like you can hear me okay. I'm hoping. I could also, let me see. Tell me if this is better. This is an idea. Okay, is this better? Maybe. Are about the same. I'm not sure. Anyway, I'll go ahead and do it this way. Maybe this is a little better sound. All right, so let's take, I think everybody's here. Oh, yeah. You can hear my breath. Oh, okay, so maybe. Okay, here we go. So let's just take a moment and bring ourselves into the shared space that we have of World Peace Diet Circle, which is dedicated to the healing of all of our relations and to creating a field of healing, of awakening, of connecting with our true nature, and to including animals and all living beings within the circle of our compassion and concern. So we're especially grateful right now for this opportunity to be together and to share our ideas, our concerns, our aspirations, and our insights, and to learn from each other and to be ever growing in our capacity to be effective advocates for all living beings, for human animals and for non-human animals, and to understand more deeply the power of what veganism actually is. So, let's see here. I'm going to I think we've got a few people maybe that are unmuted, so. We give thanks also for all of the other activists in the world, activists for the liberation of animals, for human liberation, for peace, for spiritual awakening, and people who are working to improve themselves, to purify their consciousness, and to remove as best they can the blinders that we seem to all have being raised in the world today, the way it's structured. And there's so much that we have to be grateful for, and there's so much that we can learn. So we give thanks for all the animals, for their terrible suffering and in at our hands, and their teaching of us to open our hearts to a higher way of living, to open our hearts to the golden rule. And I feel like I should correct what I just said. I certainly don't give thanks for their suffering, but give thanks that more and more people are becoming aware of their suffering, that we can put an end to this unnecessary violence. So we also hold in our hearts a vision of this beautiful earth at peace and in harmony. We see the earth now from a higher perspective as one living organism without separating border lines, without the conflict that pertains to human activities. And we see the earth as a beautiful shining jewel with infinite possibilities for being a school for learning, an amazing field of celebration and learning, the benefit of all living beings, for animals and for humans. We give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human life to use our capacities, our intellects, as well as our spiritual sensitivity to create a world of peace and freedom and justice, sustainability for all living beings. So just connecting with our breathing now. With every exhalation, we come into the still center where we are and allow a feeling of loving kindness to radiate from our heart. With every exhalation, we radiate peace from our heart, breathing and radiating peace and harmony. You see this radiating from our heart as ever expanding spheres of light, radiating out into our world, loving kindness and benevolence, the blessing to all the human beings here, all the animal beings, all living beings, beings both visible and non-visible. We hold all living beings in our heart with love and appreciation, benevolence and goodwill as we breathe together, filling the infinite web of relations with the truth of the infinite love that is the source of all life. Just activating every cell in our being at this moment. That's invigorating every thought, word, and deed, and is rejuvenating our aspiration, reminding us of the truth of our purpose and of what we are beyond merely the material level. So breathing and radiating love into the infinite web of relations. Breathing and radiating compassion to the infinite web of relations. Knowing that compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And we are the hands and the voices of compassion during our daily lives. We breathe compassion into the world. Breathing and radiating compassion. Connecting with the truth of the light of compassion that shines always in our heart. now we radiate joy into the world with every exhalation from the infinite source of joy at the heart of the universe that dwells also in our own heart, the core of our being, our true nature, is joy that needs no reasons in the outer world, the joy of being, the joy of appreciating life, celebrating all around us and within us. So filling the whole web of relations with joy with every exhalation. And finally, we breathe peace. Radiate peace into lives and consciousness, all living beings. We exclude no one from our loving, benevolent wishes, from our compassion, our joy, and our peace. There's no one outside our sphere of concern. But breathing and radiating peace and harmony, giving thanks for the truth that beyond the outer appearances, there is a deep, abiding ocean, peace and harmony that is the core of all life, underlying all the waves that we see on the surface. And that's always available to us in consciousness. The peace that also needs no reasons in the outer world. The peace of our true home. So we give thanks now as we begin to turn to our shared time together and give thanks for each other, for all the people working diligently to bring the light of kindness and love into their relationships, into all relationships, to bring the light of forgiveness, and sending our blessing to all the beings we refer to as animals. We send our apologies also on behalf of humanity. We give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human life to grow in wisdom and compassion and awareness, and for this moment that we have and this time we have to be together. And so it is. Okay, well, this has been a wonderful time to share together in this meditation time. I want to thank all of you for participating in the meditation together, connecting with the deeper truths that are very often obscured in the hustle and bustle of our daily lives, and certainly obscured in the mainstream media and most, it seems like most of the alternative media as well. So, I'd like to go ahead, like I said earlier, and welcome our special guest for our time together this evening. And, let's see here. She just joined us, which is great. And, her name is Reverend Carol Saunders. She is an ordained Unity minister. And she's based in the Midwest. And it's really, to me, it's so fantastic to find Unity ministers who are vegans, because Madeline and I have been traveling to Unity churches pretty much full time up until the last couple of years. And going to, I think, gosh, over 800 churches over the years, doing workshops and presentations, concerts and Sunday morning messages and so forth. And it's so rare to find a vegan minister. There was hardly any, a couple here and there. And it's very ironic because the Unity Movement was founded by Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, who are pretty famous, really, for being on the forefront in their day, back in the 1910s, 1920s, 1930s, of the vegetarian movement and even vegan. Before the word vegan was ever invented, Charles Fillmore was already saying that we shouldn't be harming animals. And they created a Bible back in the 1910s that had the Unity Bible, and it was especially he and Myrtle wanted to have no leather. You know, usually the covers back then were made of leather. And they used this primitive naga hide material back then because he said he didn't want any of his the younger brothers of humanity. He referred to the animals sometimes as the younger brothers, and to suffer unnecessarily. So, let's see here. Okay, great. So, I'd like to ask Reverend Carol if you can please unmute and say hello, because I'm pretty sure you're here. We can go. So let's see.
Yeah, I'm here, but yep, I'm here, but I don't know. I'm having internet issues again. I live in the country, and I'm not sure. Can you hear me? Or am I breaking up?
I hear you fine. It sounds good.
Oh, okay, great.
Can you hear me?
I can. Your video is a little, you know, like this, but. And it says that my network bandwidth is low, so I just never know. If I get kicked off, I'll come back, and I'll come back on a on my hotspot or something like that. But did you just want me to talk, or did you? What do you want to do?
Well, great. It's just so great. I just wanted to welcome you, and you know, I think there's probably I've given a little bit of background. You probably heard it, so. I think if you could say a little bit to all of us about your experience and your whatever your thoughts are about veganism not only the Unity Movement, but sort of the progressive spiritual movement in the United States, especially. I guess that's what we're mostly familiar with. If you know anything more worldwide, but especially the United States. And you know, how you think, you know, what your experience has been, I guess, you know, trying to bring the vegan message to progressive spiritual people, and if that's been easy or difficult and why, and any thoughts you have about how we can bring this message to people who are, you would think, would be very open to this message, actually.
Yeah, it is fascinating. Yeah, it's fascinating, especially in Unity, like you mentioned, the film wars. I mean, a fundamental teaching is this, is not eating animals. And it wasn't just for mercy. It was also because the pain and the suffering of animals, was something that you're ingesting. And it's like that we don't want to bring death and suffering into our bodies. And they were so clear about this. And it's just so bizarre that over all these years, that Unity just decides, well, you know, Charles and Myrtle were really great, but they were off on a couple of things. For some reason, this is one they pick. So it's been very, very frustrating. Yeah, it's very frustrating on one hand. It's like, why can't you guys hear this? Why is this, you know, my food choice? It's your food choice. It's like, you know, don't bother people about their choice versus really looking at the history. So a few years ago, I did a seminar at one of the Unity conventions, and it was about the teachings of Charles and Myrtle Fillmore and how they relate to our connection with other animals and how it relates to world peace and ethical living and health and I can't remember what else. Anyway, all of those things. So I will say, as a minister, I have successfully converted many people to veganism, but by going the very gentle approach.
Right.
Yeah. So I remember one year when I was still doing church, we were doing Earth Day, and I said, wait, for Earth Day, we really should do minimum footprint for Earth Day, so let's do all a plant-based potluck. And some people were kind of, you know, that's dumb or whatever, but everyone really enjoyed the cooking, and they brought the food, and it was a great introduction to plant-based eating. I also held a little class on the teachings of Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. I've done that a couple times. And whenever I do my talks, not whenever, but often when I do my talks, I'll bring it in, not like as a topic, but as a, you know, if you're talking about love one another, you know, who is one another, or the golden rule, treating others how you want to be treated, who are others, you know, and asking people to relook at, you know, what that is, and our boundaries between us and animals, and to also include animals. Now, I want to make sure that you're still hearing me as I'm talking. Am I doing okay?
Yeah, this is good. Yeah, I can hear you. So far, so everything's good.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because I keep getting this message saying my network bandwidth is low, and I have internet that is kind of Wi-Fi internet, and so I'm competing with everybody watching Netflix at the same time, I think. Anyway,
right.
I see that. I think Judy is on. Yeah, so thank you. Good. Just send me a note if I'm not. Judy Carmen, I can see she's on this call. She has tabled with me before at Unity Conventions, and we're there to bring the vegan message through vegan spirituality and the Interfaith Vegan Coalition. And it is interesting to see how people just kind of like walk by the table, or they're like, you know, I'm paleo or whatever. But they, you know, we get a good deal of interest and talking about, you know, how in the beginning, whether you believe the Bible is literal or metaphysical or allegorical, you know, humankind was given a plant-based diet. And when I look at the Bible, honestly, when I look at the Bible, it looks to me like there are writers that are vegetarian, vegan, animal-centered, and the writers that are meat eaters. And it's almost like you can see the meat eater writer come in and then the vegan eater writer come in. I feel like there's competition in the Bible for this, and you can kind of see it if you look at it that way. But anyway, the prophets always said, this is God's intention, coming back to the original thing. And so, you know, I think it's just really the right thing, the right message, a great message for anybody on the spiritual path. And you know, like we all know as advocates, we are, we get that stuff coming backwards, the projection coming back to us, which is probably guilt or uncertainty or whatever. But I think the best way to handle it is just to kind of be compassionate with people where they are and just ask questions. Because everything that we say is just a little tiny seed. So as an example of that, Will, I remember having dinner with you many, many, many years ago, and you're mentioning something about 9/11. And it was like, I wasn't there. I had no idea what you were talking about. Kind of irritated me, but it was a little seed that was planted that kind of maybe took hold about 10 years later. So we are planting seeds all the time. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the world goes, you know, the vegan message is really important for the world. I think particularly as we look at what's happening in the world, I don't know about everybody who's here or not, but when you look at what seems like humans being treated like animals. I don't know. Is that okay to talk about in this session?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah, you can, whatever.
Okay. I just don't know where people are, because I know that this is a splitting of the vegan movement, you know?
Well, yeah, it is. I think it's important to share what our perceptions are, because veganism is compassion and respect for all living beings, animals and humans. And I think, you know, we can't just ignore things that are happening, you know. So
right.
Go ahead, whatever. And as you mentioned that,
I do feel like that is the vegan message, that it is that love and compassion for all. And I've thought this for many years now, that if we would take the approach of this being a love and peace movement, I just feel like we're a love and peace movement. And including animals in our circle of compassion just makes sense. And we cannot hate other humans for where they are and for their shortcomings and their stupidity or their ignorance or whatever. We can't be, you know, slamming and blaming and yelling at other humans, which I see a lot in the vegan movement. It's very disturbing to me. But anyway, back to what I was saying. I think the vegan message is really important today as we are experiencing, I see over and over again, people either are completely buying into the narrative about COVID or they're complaining that we're being treated like cattle. And it's like, once they say we're being treated like cattle, the question is, why do we treat cattle like that? And we need to really look at that. And I think most of the freedom movement people aren't really willing to look at that. Like it's bad that we're being treated like animals, but how can we awaken people to looking at why are we treating animals like this? We shouldn't be treating animals like this. We don't want to be treated like this. So I really see, even though it looks nearly impossible, I really see an opening also to teach people on that side of the message as well.
Okay. So, yeah, that's, it seems to me it's kind of hard. I've been trying to do the same thing, to try to raise awareness through all of this, that if we're going to insist on abusing animals, we're sowing the seeds of the same thing to happen to us. You know, that kind of an idea, which I think is hard for most people to, if they're vegans, I would think they would understand this, but for people who are, we say, pre-vegans, it's a lot harder. Do you think that right now within the unity movement, I know you've like had this wonderful vision of having a conference where we really come together and at Unity Village, and we talk about the founders of Unity being vegans and the Unity movement really growing so fast in those early years when it was basically vegetarian and vegan, and then how it strayed away from that, but now we have a new foundation based on sustainability and based on all the things we know now to really go back to those roots. Do you see that? Do you think that's happening, or do you think that the COVID situation is kind of squelching everything and making it difficult to bring that? It seemed like the momentum was the beginning, and then it, I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that COVID has really revealed who everyone is. So like pre-COVID, we could pretend who we were, but because of COVID, like everybody's exposed. And so do you really trust God? Do you really trust the natural healing capability of the body? Are you even in your body? Where is your spiritual level? Where are you? And I think a lot of people who talk and you know, deliver sermons and support people as ministers, I think that you see how they respond to COVID, where they are spiritually. So what I've seen Unity do, and it's been really disappointing to me, I feel like they've thrown out the basic teachings of healing through COVID. You know,
right.
It's like, why aren't we standing up and saying, everyone, your body is a sacred temple and we have the capability of healing our bodies. Now, Myrtle healed her body. For those who don't know, Myrtle had, she had tuberculosis, and she was given the sentence of, you know, you're going to die in 6 months. And instead of that, she sat for 2 years in prayer And she sat with a rocking chair, an empty rocking chair next to her. And, you know, she envisioned Jesus being there. So whatever your beliefs are, Jesus to her was an important being. And she just meditated and prayed and focused on her healing in every cell of her body. At the same time, probably also taking care of her body and being in her body. All right. So here we are, fast forward, you know, 125, 30 years later. And this thing called COVID comes, and everyone's running for the corners and worried about this germ and how we need to not infect each other. And it's like, wait a minute, that's not even close to our original teachings. So I'm concerned about unity in general, just throwing a lot of teachings out. The animal teachings, the peace teachings, the healing teachings. So is there hope? Yeah, of course there's hope. We have a change in leadership now. I'm pretty sure, Will, that the new CEO of Uni Worldwide Ministries is vegan.
Oh, really? Who's that? I don't think I remember know who it is.
Oh, gosh.
You remember?
Yeah, I know
it's
him.
Okay.
I'm spacing out his name right now. He's a young guy. Shad, his
cool.
name is Shad, and I can't remember his last name.
Oh, yeah. Chad Grover.
He comes from Groverland. Groverland.
It's Jack. Yeah. Jack's son. Jack Groverland's son.
Yes.
Yeah, Jack Groverland's son. Yeah, I know him a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, he could be.
I will say
this
about Shad.
He could be a vegan. Yeah, he's it's interesting.
Yeah, he's vegan. He came to my seminar, and he was very supportive when I did my seminar on the teachings of Charles Fillmore. But I think he does shy away from the V term. He shies away from veganism in terms of being able to reach unity people. And I think he wants to reach them more through plant-based. And this is the other thing I find.
Right.
This is the other thing I find in unity. Sorry, I'm being kind of full disclosure. The other thing I find is I was collaborating with somebody at one point to start kind of an organization kind of like Jewish Veg within unity. But my collaborating partner really wanted to downplay animals. Like, we don't really want to talk about animals. You know, we want to talk about health and the environment. And, you know, compassion is a good thing, too, because people just can't handle the animals thing. It's like, what on earth? You know, so there's a spectrum. There's a spectrum in unity. And Shad, who is vegan, he shies also away from, you know, the V term.
Yeah, I think pretty much all the ministers do, because they feel that the saying I'm vegan, it creates a category and other people are not vegan, and it's divisive to use the word in their congregation. So that I think pretty much most ministers learn not to say it, because they can say they care about animals and they don't eat animal foods, something like that. But you're right. I think, that's kind of, in a way, it's understandable. I mean, I think I love the word vegan personally, and I use it a lot, but I do also feel that it's not necessarily always the best to use it. There's times when it's better not to use it. There's times when it's better. If someone says, oh, you're not eating the ice, whatever, the cheese and crackers I put out here on the table that everybody else is eating. Why aren't you eating it? If I just say, well, Chris, I'm a vegan, you know, they think, oh, you're in this club, vegan. If I say, well, I don't like to contribute to the suffering of female cows, then it's like, oh, that means something. And so I think, you know, it's important to, sometimes not to use the word, you know. But,
yeah, I think the word,
do you have any sense
that this, go ahead.
No, it's okay. The group is problematic, did you say?
I think the vegan group can be problematic, because I think there's a lot of mean vegans out there that hate people.
Mm. Yeah, right. Especially in the last year.
I think that's a problem.
That's
it's a label, and it's a problem, and that's why I think the movement really needs to be about compassion, not just about compassion and love and peace, but that's what the movement needs to be. I mean, I see it successful if we could really focus on the principles and as we manifest these principles, what kind of world we create. We create a world of compassion, love, and peace and harmony to the extent that is possible. And that we extend that to all beings because we know that all beings are God's beloved. It's really important. All beings are God's beloved. And I have these little Facebook arguments all the time, or not arguments, but just bringing to people's attention that whenever they say, but God, they were created for us. It's like, where is that in the Bible? You know, it's like, that's not in the Bible. Whoever told you that told you a lie. That's not there. And then I try to clarify what is there. But it's a narrative that people just accepted over these years. It's one of those, one of the things I like to teach is the four agreements. And Don Miguel Ruiz talks about the domestication of the planet. And one of the things I really teach in my ministry is to question all things that we've learned. Everything, like everything you've ever learned. Very hard for people to see that. It's so very hard for people to get out of their paradigm enough to be able to look at, oh, should I question things like viruses? Should I question what I eat? Should I question, do I need protein? I can only get protein from animals and those kinds of things. Human beings are just not generally able to question those things, but that's what Don Miguel Ruiz calls us to do, is to question everything and to recognize that we have been domesticated since birth. And for us to come back to the Garden of Eden within us, come back to our authentic self, the truth that we were created as, we have to undo all of that domestication, undo every paradigm, everything that we've been taught. And maybe we accept it again, but at least don't accept it because we were just taught it. And things like animals were made for us. Where does that come from? It came from somebody on the pulpit. It comes from books. It comes from what people say. It's myth. It's not anywhere. And it's not in the Bible. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that I think the spiritual path calls us to do, is to really just undo all of it.
Great. Yeah, I love what you're saying. It's so true. And I would like to just now open it up to everyone. If anyone has any questions or comments, please feel free to press *6 on your phone. I don't like to keep Reverend Carol too long here. We have things we actually want to address, but it's really a wonderful opportunity to have a real live Unity Vegan minister there, right here. And like I say, I went through so many years wandering in the wilderness looking for a Unity Vegan ministers and never finding any. And it's really very, very precious to me. Okay, go ahead, Antoinette. Yes.
Yes. Thank you so much, Reverend Saunders.
Are you unmuted?
Oh, yes, I am. Can you hear me? Yes? Okay, great. So, yes, I am. Yes. I joined Unity when I was like, gosh, I think in my late 20s. And I just loved the church, and I relied on the daily word for many, many years, maybe decades. And I know I learned in the Prayer for Compassion movie that had some great coverage about the interviews with the church and, you know, confronting them about not being vegan. You know, I just wanted to say I really appreciate so much what you said and the examples that you gave. I will say, as a human, I have to admit, you know, sometimes I get frustrated, and sometimes I wouldn't call myself, well, yeah, I would say sometimes I've been a hater. You know, sometimes I've just gotten so frustrated with people that I just want to throttle them. But, you know, I loved what you said. I needed to be reminded of that. You know, we have to have compassion. And I know that's what Dr. Tuttle says, you know, for their ignorance and for being misguided. Just thank you so much. I really like what you're saying. And I hope there's an opportunity. I don't know if there's a way to follow you or participate in your teachings or things like that. But I would definitely be interested in that. So. Thank you.
To say a couple things about that. I do have a podcast. It's called The Spiritual Forum. And I'm also co-organizing the Vegan Spirituality Forum and Retreat at Unity Village, October 1st through 3rd this year. And it's going to be the first ever vegan retreat at Unity Village. And we want to have it at Unity Village. We want to, like, resurrect those teachings And we'll have speakers. Will is invited. I'll probably going to do a seminar on the teachings of the Fillmores and the original teachings. And it's going to be an opportunity for us to be together and collaborate on how to bring this message to our spiritual communities, and how to live spiritually as a vegan. And we're also going to have, you know, rituals and ceremonies, and it's going to be great. So take a look at that. That's on my website, thespiritualform.org. And you'll see there's a button for a retreat, and you'll see what the whole retreat's going to look like.
Yes, I had signed up for the one that was supposed to happen last year that was undone because of the fun suck virus, some people like to call it now.
See. Well, hopefully you can come this year. We hope that it's going to be
great.
I'm Chrissy. I'll check in. It was great. The proper form of address, but I loved everything you had to say. I live in Nashville now, but I used to live in New York City, and I got to know Victoria Moran when I was in New York City, and a couple of times had the chance to co-host her radio show, which is broadcast through Unity Radio. So it was through her that I learned some of the background of the church. And I myself am not religious, but I've, you know, delved into some of the history of the Bible and just the, you know, like you said, how some of the prophets seem to have an agenda of making permissible, you know, eating animals. So I'm well aware of that kind of stuff. And I'm totally with you on just what you mentioned about how people refer to being treated like animals or being treated like cattle, that always grates on my nerves because I always think to myself, so in other words, you're implying that if we were cattle, it would be totally okay what you're doing to us. And, you know, I differ from that a little bit. And then totally with you on all the COVID stuff. I mean, the vegan community, it's been very disappointing with a few notable exceptions, you know, like Will and Pam Popper and a few other people. But just as a whole, it's just been really disappointing. And so I'm trying not to live in that disappointment and, you know, kind of bitterness toward the vegan community. I feel like I, you know, almost gave the vegan community too much credit for critical thinking and independent, you know, analysis and courage and integrity and honor and inner confidence and all that stuff. And but again, vegans are just humans. And when I think of it in terms of just awareness and fear, and I think what you said just about how the events of this past year and a half really have just reveals a lot about who we are, for good and for bad. It's helped me get more in touch with just being who I am and just letting go of some people pleasing because, you know, am I trying to impress people that are living under a delusion? You know, there's really nothing for me to gain from getting these people's approval, but at the same time, not becoming a misogynist and just doing my best to, you know, live in truth and carry truth and figure out what all that means. And I'm grateful to my vegan journey because that helped inform my experience of all of this, as did my experience with the events surrounding 9/11. That was kind of my, you know, one of my first experiences in differentiating, like, just taking a look at just some basic science and seeing things that did and didn't add up. That was one of my big experiences. And then also through my vegan journey and my education in nutrition, that was where I really learned that what the media says the science says often isn't what the science actually says. So it's not that I am not a fan of science, but it's that I recognize that, well, sometimes you have to actually look into things for yourself. And, you know, the events of this past year and a half have proven that beyond any doubt. So those are just a few things on my mind, but it's wonderful to be here. And I'm definitely going to see if I can make it to your retreat in October. That sounds wonderful. So So thank you.
That would be great. Yeah. I want to say, this may be really radical for people. I'm just going to say what I think, and you can throw it out if you want, but I really think we're in the most unusual times like ever. And I think we're here for a reason during this time. I think our souls have decided to incarnate here for a reason. I think the, humanity is splitting in a very strange way. Like we're on two different reality timelines, and you could be standing next to another person and their reality is so different. It's not like it used to be where we could have different perceptions, different beliefs, different whatever. Now it's like reality for person A is so different from person B, and we could barely even talk to each other because we're just in different worlds. And even though unity is all about there's only good and only one presence and only one power, and they don't really do much teaching about Satan or evil or anything like that, I do feel like everything's upside down right now in the world. It's very strange. It's like health is sickness and care is restriction, and, you know, lies are truth and truth are lies. Everything is inverted. And it does seem like we're in some sort of a weird good and evil thing going on. Now, that's not a unity teaching, okay? That's so not unity. All the stuff that's going on with us and how we're having problems understanding the other vegans, they were the critical thinkers. How come they're not with us on this? It's like, or like I'm saying, why aren't the unity people with the unity teachings on healing? So everything's revealed. The light's on all of us. We can see where we are in our evolution, and there is a split. I really do feel like there's a split, and it's sad because I have family members on, you know, on the other reality, and I have friends on the other reality, and am I making sense? I mean, this is how it seems to me. So I feel like we keep feeling disappointment. We keep feeling frustrated. Why can't we wake more people up? Why can't people understand what we're saying? And we can't wake more people up because they're not ready to wake up. They're not there. They can't understand what we're saying because they can't understand what they're saying. And I feel like we're spending a lot of energy, being frustrated where, you know, I know you're not religious, but, you know, on the cross, Jesus said, Father, forgive them for they don't know what they're doing. That's kind of where we are, you know, like not everybody knows what they're doing. We just need to let that go and go about our business and creating the world that we need to create with the people who understand what we're talking about.
Agreed.
Thank you. Thanks, Reverend Carol. Yeah, that's well said. We have a few other people with hands up. You still would like to speak? I think Julie has her hand up. Would you still like to say something,
sure.
Julie?
Yeah. Yes. First, hi, Carol. Reverend Carol, very nice to see you again. You always sound great. We're all blessed by your presence. What I wanted to ask was, we know, you know, you're a Christian minister, and we know that the Buddhists are not supposed to gravitate towards eating meat. But what about other religions? Do you know off the top of your head that it's okay for us to say there's no religion that thinks animals are for us?
I'm actually also have an interfaith. I actually also have ordination as an interfaith minister, too. So I studied the other world religions. And to me, I would think maybe the Jains and some aspects of Hinduism and some aspects of Buddhism. But I remember when I was doing my interfaith ordination, and I was supposed to immerse myself in Buddhism. So I went to a temple and met, you know, I participated in Buddhism for a month, and we would go out to lunch, and we went to this Thai restaurant, and I just remember it was just me and all men. They were all men. and me. And I remember they all ordered like chicken. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why are you guys ordering chicken? Are the teachings about, you know, harming no life? And they, oh my gosh, they were just reminding me. They reminded me the same way that unity people say, you know, we don't want to impose choices. We don't want to tell people what they need to eat. These Buddhists were saying, well, the Buddha taught us that we need to be polite and not refuse the food that's being served to us. And it's like, well, wait a minute. You chose the chicken. You chose the chicken. No one just put chicken in front of you. So everybody's got this little caveat. And I think it's because the baser energies of us are a little more savage. I don't know how else to say that. And if we, so eating flesh is not our natural, it's not our natural, birthright. Somewhere along the line, we lost our way. And it's almost like it kind of reminds me of Lord of the Rings, like my precious. It reminds me of flesh, you know. It's like people are enamored by it. And for some reason, they can't give that up because they're just not really in tune with who they are as beings. And I feel like that happens across the board with religions, except for maybe the Jains. I don't know. Will, do you have some perspective on that?
Yeah. I've done a lot with the Jains and the Buddhists, and I can talk a long time about it. But I think basically the Jains are, you know, their main thing is ahimsa, so they pretty much don't eat any eggs or animal flesh, and they won't eat root vegetables like potatoes and carrots because that might hurt insects. But man, they love dairy and eat a lot of dairy. So they don't see that as being you know, a harmful thing. But actually, there's quite a strong movement among young Jains to try to get more vegan, and some of the older Jains too. So, I've spoken at many Jain conferences I've been invited to promote veganism there. And so they're open to it, but it's a work in process, like it is really everywhere. I think the Buddhists also, the Thai Buddhists are known for eating a lot of meat, and it's a long, I can go into the details why, but Chinese and Vietnamese, and Taiwanese and Koreans don't. They're vegan. They're basically vegan. And, in the temples, they're vegan. When they go out, they're not supposed to, but it's much more. They actually, in ancient China around 600 AD, they just had a big gathering. The emperor said, get yourselves together and just decide what do? You eat meat or not? And so they decided back then, no meat. and then it spread from China to Vietnam and to Taiwan and to Korea. So that's basically held up, luckily, but it didn't go in Thailand and Sri Lanka, you know, the other places, they still make excuses about it, unfortunately. Hmm. But anyway, that's a great answer. Thanks so much for sharing. Great question, George. Pardon me? It's an addiction?
It's just an addiction.
Yeah, perhaps.
It's an addiction. It's an addiction. And I actually think that my analogy of Gollum and the ring, it just reminds me of that. It's like people just can't let go of meat. But I mean, if you really spiritually.
Yeah.
If you're really spiritually advanced, and there's a lot of vegans that I don't think are necessarily spiritually advanced. So veganism doesn't mean spiritually advanced, but I think spiritually advanced does mean vegan. If you get my drift there. And I think that if you felt that meat, like my body really needed meat, you'd probably eat it like once or twice a month, maybe, you know, I mean, you wouldn't eat it like people are eating it now, you know?
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, there's many levels of addiction, physical, psychological, mm-hmm. cultural. Mm-hmm. And I think there is some of that. And there's also, I think the thing in Thailand, I'll just tell you, in Thailand, what it is mainly is they didn't eat much meat if you went back like 500 years. At all. But then with the Westernization, when the French came in, the British and other, you know, Europeans came in, they brought meat. Oh. And it was for the elites. It was for the people, you know, the higher classes. And so up until that time, when the monks went out begging, because that's what they do. They go out with their bowls begging, and it would be a big insult to give a monk some meat, you know, in the old days. That would be like, you're just a lousy monk. I'm going to give you some meat. But then after it became, when the Europeans came and made it this very prestigious thing, it was very expensive. You know, nobody could eat meat except for the kings, the royalty. And so the monks are looked at like royalty in Thailand. You actually go down and you see a monk, you're down on your knees, right? I mean, that's what they do. When I was a Buddhist monk in Korea, even, I you know, people would come in and they'd be on their knees in front of me because I was a monk. You know, that's what they do. So now these people, they can't even afford rice for themselves, but they'll, with a little extra money, they'll buy some meat to give it to the monk when he comes around, even though they would never eat it. They don't have the money for it because they feel like they're getting merit, like they're giving a big gift. Mm. And then, so the monks have this, as it goes along, they get this sense of entitlement, like, oh, we're the monks, you know. And you got to remember, Thailand is a monarchy. Whatever the king says, that's law. And it's against law. When I was in Thailand, believe me, if you say anything against the monks, you can go to jail. I mean, it's not at all democratic. I mean, nothing's democratic, but I mean, if the monk complains, you say something against them, you can go to jail. So everybody doesn't say anything about the monks because you can, you know, they're like right under the king. And it's just a weird system there in Thailand. And so they just think that they're entitled. Because for the last 100 years they've been getting, you know, or 50 years they've been getting a lot of meat because the people think that they're so high and they're used to it. But again, there are, like when I gave lectures around Thailand, and there's definitely a movement to get them to go vegan. There's a lot of tension around the whole thing. So it's happening everywhere. In Tibet too, it's a similar thing. But you're right. I think addiction. Yeah.
Either way, addiction, but I think you bring up a really good point, because I've had many conversations with a person who is kind of really big in the peace movement, and he's African American, and he's really about creating a new world that works for all and all this kind of stuff, but he cannot see the animal thing at all. And I think there is also this ancestral thing that we inherited, that, yeah, it's like the elite, the royalty have meat, and you know, my ancestors I was born impoverished and we just scraped, but now I can have meat, you know, like it's something that elevates them. So there's kind of a status thing,
right,
whether it's overt or it's just in the consciousness of the ancestral, what they've inherited ancestrally. I think that's also part of it.
Good point. Yeah, that's the main thing. You see it everywhere. When people get enough money, they want to eat meat because now they have the money and this is status. And this is a huge problem all over the world. It's a big problem in India. When we go to India, among Hindus too, among Jains actually, even. I mean, there's even meat eating Jains. I mean, part of it is the status, like, well, we want to be more like the Europeans and so forth, you know. So that's why it's so important for us, like in the most wealthy country, to go vegan. Yeah.
Right, it is. And also to address your question, Julie, there's books that are really kind of interesting that I think make a pretty good case that Jesus was vegan. And that's mind blowing, but just because the Bible says things, because he talked about fish and whatnot, but he converted fishermen to fishers of men. He went into the temple and freed all of the animals, and he got killed for that. And so there's also, if you really dig into the history, there's really good books that would say Jesus was vegan.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
But what,
yeah,
what
I talk
religions,
about that in World Peace Diet too.
What religions will say, oh no, we are entitled to eat animals, and it's here in the book? Are there any religions like that that specifically
have
it in the book? Yeah, which religions think they're entitled to eat meat, if any?
Well, I know in the Bible, you know, yeah, satanic, yeah, right, that's true. I know in the Bible the diet was plants and fruits, seed bearing plants, up until the flood. And whether you believe the Bible is historical, true, or allegorical, mythical, it doesn't matter. Just take it mythically. Mm-hmm. And with the flood, then, you know, presumably vegetation was flooded out, whatever, and they asked God, can we eat animals? Really weird, because they just spent all this time keeping the animals safe on the ark. So why would you want to eat them? But apparently that's when meat eating started. It was permitted. And this is the important thing. In the Bible, it was permitted. It was never said that, well, yeah, now you can go exploit everything. They're all for you. It was kind of like to prevent you from starving in this dire circumstance, it would be permitted. And people just have lived off that and said, oh, okay, I guess animals are for us. It's an erroneous teaching. That said, there's some weird things I know in the Bible that would say things like God is really well pleased with the smell of the sacrifice in the temple. And then you'd also hear prophets saying God doesn't want that. So that's what I was saying. I think these competing factions. I don't know what religions say overtly animals are here for us. I would have to really look into whether or not there's any religion that actually comes right out and says animals are here for us. I think it's more implied and inferred, and I think it's more cultural.
I just wanted to know and be forearmed with a comeback or whatever you would need to say if somebody said, oh, no, it's right here in the book. And I'm like, what? Because it sounds like to me that nobody should be allowed. But then you hear stories of people making animal sacrifices and all this stuff. So somebody thinks it's okay to just waste animals and to eat them. And I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
What group that might be.
I mean, they made human sacrifices too, you know, so do we do that, you know? They did all sorts of horrible things historically. Do we do that because they did that historically? It makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Good one. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, there was, I think, one other person, Christine. Did you still have a question?
Thank you.
Christine Solonetsky.
That's right. You got it. Thank you. So, yeah, thank you, everyone. This has been wonderful. It's my first time joining this group. My friend Michael told me about it. I'm so very excited. I just a couple of things from Reverend Saunders that you said, you know, the image of, you know, from Lord of the Rings is like, wow, that really, there's something to that that really seems palpable for me. I'm a naturopath by profession, and in terms of speaking to many of my patients, like some they're fine and others is like, I'll do anything, but I won't give up my meat. Like it's just a sense mm-hmm. of, yeah, it's just this really strange, addiction or something that's there. The other thing is I've also been a long-term Unity member, Unity of London, and I guess it was maybe 3 years ago now, I actually did a talk there on animals. I didn't use the word vegan, I don't think, ever, but it was basically looking at the teachings, but going not just the teachings of the Fillmores, but uni principles and applying it to, like, you know, again, creating a world that works for all. Something that we used to say more in Unity, and then that started disappearing. It became more... that like our vision became a little different, but I like that vision, creating a world that works for all. And I mean, it was actually quite incredible that I was able to do this talk, and it's only because of Reverend Lori Hissen at the time that she was more open, and that she basically, against the wishes of the board, she just made it happen. And I mean, I think, and so I was very explicit. It was specifically on the topic of what do we mean when we say creating a world that works for all, and who are we including? It was very much about that. And I think I was gentle with it, but still clear. Like I wasn't beating around the bush. I was just stating how I saw it. And, you know, some people came up to me after and were upset, but, others were also very, you know, came up and thanked me and asked questions. And, I actually haven't been going to Unity. I don't know why. Once it switched to being online, I did it for a bit. And then I don't know, for some reason, I just stopped. And I think I would like to get back to it. So I have no idea what people are thinking here in Unity of London around the current circumstances. So I'm a little curious, but I'm sort of anticipating it'll be like, much of the rest of the world around us, which, is bizarre to me, but nonetheless, So I just also want to say, I don't know if for October, whether everything's like, you've already got all your speakers, because I would certainly love to be a speaker in terms of even showing my presentation and if that might be, I could say a prototype and an example of one kind of talk that might be done. So I don't know, maybe you've already got all your speakers lined up already for October.
We have our speakers. We're still working on seminars and workshops and that kind of thing. So, most of what we want to focus our, so we have like keynotes, and then we want to focus our seminars more on how do we get this message into our communities. And so, maybe you do have something that would be great to offer if you were to come. You'd be coming from London?
we're still
London, Ontario.
Yeah, we're London, Ontario.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
But we're in pretty strict lockdown right now. I think by July things are finally going to open up fully, but yeah, we're still like we're behind you in the States even here. It's pretty still tight.
Yeah, if you're in Ontario, yeah, you're in a totalitarian state. Sorry.
No apology.
It would be great if you could come. But that's what we're looking for our workshops, just okay. and talks and also just collaborating on how we can do this. So that's exactly what we're into.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Christine. Thank you so much, Reverend Carol, for sharing some of your experience. And I think I'll just say here at the end, it's something I'm sure you're aware of as a minister, but I became aware of it myself traveling, because every Sunday for probably over 20 years, I gave a talk at Unity Church somewhere in the United States, usually in the United States. And after, several years of giving talks every Sunday, sometimes the minister was there, sometimes the minister was gone on vacation, or they were between ministers. So I had different levels of attitude of what I could say, mm-hmm. I felt like. But I remember feeling more and more like, I've just got to bring the vegan message to these people. They always talk about love and compassion and kindness and caring and peace. And so I just started doing that. I remember the first time I really did it very strongly was at the Unity Church in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. The minister was away. And I just let him have it. And it was this one guy in the middle of my talk got up and walked out and slammed the door. but I just kept going because I thought, this truth is exactly what Charles and Myrtle Fillmore absolutely were talking about. It's one thing to say we're loving and kind, but like, how do we actually live this with regards to the beings who are at our mercy? And it was really neat because afterwards there was quite a few people who just thanked me, heartily for bringing it up. But there were quite a few, that were outraged about it. And I think at the time they weren't really that upset. But what I could see was that as the days went by Wednesday, they were really, really angry. it's like a slow thing. It's like by Wednesday, they were saying, who's this guy coming in here telling me I can't have my steak? That's not what this religion's about. And I realized, then I talked to the minister when she came back and explained everything to her and so forth. But, and then as time went on, I kept speaking about this, and then it got out that, I would talk to a minister, or they'd send me an email and say, well, you can come and speak here as long as you don't say anything about animals or food or anything like that. They started making these laws about what I could say. And so it became very clear to me, which I think probably everybody's aware, I'm sure Carol's aware, that a minister really, unfortunately, has to run a business. I mean, it's important for the minister to have happy customers, or the whole thing's going to fall apart. I mean, they're not going to give their money, they're not going to pay their dues, or their donations aren't going to come in, or whatever. And so you want to have happy congregants, and one of the things that will make them very unhappy is to question their food habits and other things like that. So it's a situation, not just in Unity. I see it really strongly in Unitarians too. I see it really strongly in Buddhists. I mean, everywhere. When I was at the Tibetan Buddhist Center, the Dalai Lama came and he knows he shouldn't eat meat, but all the high lamas are eating meat. And if he started not eating meat, it would make them look bad. And they'd rebel against him, you know. I mean, there's all these complex social relationships, and everything revolves around food. Everything revolves around eating. Eating is the most intimate, sacred thing we do. And so you have somebody start throwing a monkey wrench in the gears of food. It just has huge, you know, impact. And so I think that's the thing with all the world religions, whoever it is, these communities they're based on people getting together and sharing time and sharing food. I mean, you always have a potluck, a barbecue, whatever, and animals are very often on the plate, on the menu. So I'm telling you, it was so refreshing to be in China, where the main religion in the whole country, they were paying me to give talks to promote veganism, you know, like, you know, that's what they wanted. They wanted everybody to go vegan. And it was so refreshing, because coming back here or going to Europe or going to the Middle East, or I mean, the Muslims is almost, you were asking about that, Julie, that's almost a little worse, because mm-hmm. they really feel kind of like that's they're basically needy yeah. and herders, you know. But it's very strong, of course, in all three Abrahamic traditions, basically. So now this is the situation, and I think it's just, we just got to keep pushing ahead as best we can. And I'm so grateful for you, Carol, and for this wonderful conference. And I hope you can make it, Christine. It would be great. And I know Judy will be there, and I hope others will come. It'll be a real wonderful opportunity to get back to the roots of unity, and then hopefully other faiths and traditions will do the same thing.
I won't go into very much, but I think what you're doing is you were calling into question people's sense of themselves of being a good person. And so, you know, when you challenge people, they're like, wait a minute, but I'm a good person and you're telling me I'm not a good person. And it's in the spiritual world, that is really hard for people to get, you know, and I always teach that, get rid of the idea that I'm a good person. Get rid of that idea. It's a thought. It's not even true. I'm a good person is not a good thing to carry around, because then you're always defending that. And then the other thing that I wanted to say is, all we know that was at Jesus's Passover meal was bread and wine. So there you go. We know nothing about a lamb being there.
Right. Exactly. It's so obvious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining us. And if you want to stay on, you know, you're certainly welcome. We only have another 15 minutes, actually. We went longer than we usually do with a guest, but you were worth it. You were great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much. Okay. Bless you. Thanks again.
All right. Okie doke. Thanks for having me.
Great. Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah. Okay. Well, we have... that was interesting. And these are always, I think, it's important to come back to religion. You know, I mean, religion actually does have a tremendous power in our society, in most any society. It's the one institution in society that's really has as its domain ethics. I mean, it's our relationship and the quality of our relationships. And so when we're talking about veganism, we're talking about ethics. And so that's been a big block, I think, in the vegan movement, is the fact that most religions are not behind us nearly the way they could be, like they did in other social justice movements very often. So we're working on that. And I know Judy Carman's been working on that a lot too. And before we go on, actually, here we are now. There's no guest speaker or anything like that. Does anyone have any thoughts or questions or comments just in general for the group that's just us, about anything else, about whatever you want to bring up? Because we have only about 15, at the most 15 more minutes on our time that you'd like to either ask a question or make a comment or share a concern, anything like that, because this is a good time to do that now that we've moved on away from focusing more on the whole religious thing. Okay, we have a hand up here by Fred. Go ahead. Yes, Fred.
I will. Thanks. One of the things I was brought up in the Catholic religion, and I remember when they were talking about Holy Communion, and they preached, his words were, "This is my body, this is my blood." And when you took communion, you were partaking of Jesus' body, you know, flesh, if you want to put it in that regard. So I don't know if Julie's question about is there any religion that condoned it. You can take that as an example that it's okay to eat of flesh because of that teaching.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. You know, I've thought a lot about that over the years. The idea of the transubstantiation of the bread and the wine into the actual body and blood of Christ, of Jesus. I mean, I guess, or I mean, whatever. Like Christ is Christ, and because it seems to me, not to be sacrilegious or anything, but it seems to me that most of the rituals in Christianity in general are actually older pagan rituals that were that they kind of took over, you know, like Easter and Christmas and, you know, all these things. They were already, there was lots of other in earlier times, and there were also many myths, not in a negative sense, but the myths in the sense of stories that really organized people's lives around a savior who had 12 disciples, who had who was killed and rose on the third day. I mean, there was many other examples of that from the Egyptian and from the Babylonian myths and scriptures and so forth. And so I think there was a lot of kind of tuning in and sort of using those in order to popularize this religion at the time, to make it popular and to tie in and, you know, the solstice rituals, the Easter, of course, the celebrating the estrus cycle. I mean, the whole new life kind of thing. So when you think about eating, you know, the sacrifice, you know, the idea of sacrifice, they would sacrifice in the temple at Jerusalem. It was a bloodbath, right? I mean, everybody knows that. It's no question about it. That's what the Essenes, and Jesus, there's a lot of evidence that Jesus was an Essene, and Nazarenes were a branch of the Essenes, and that he was born into the Essenes and was a Nazarene, and strict. And the Essenes were very strict. They had four or five vows. One vow was a vow never to give an oath. One vow was a vow never to own a slave. One was to never eat animal flesh. And one was to never drink alcohol. And so those are the four basic vows of the Essenes, and the Nazarenes were part of that. And his brother, James, who became James the Just, who really took over after he died, he took over. He was known to never, not only ever eat meat, but to not even wear wool. He only would wear cotton, which sounds very much like something from an ethical point of view of not harming animals. There's a lot of evidence in books Keith Akers and other people have written that talk about the fact that the people who wrote about those early Christians who were called Ebionites, everyone who wrote about them said they never eat meat. You know, they never eat, they certainly didn't eat dairy or, you know, they didn't drink alcohol. So, there's this idea of the temple being basically a place where people would bring, depending on how much money they had, they'd bring a sheep or a goat, or they'd bring a chicken or a bird of some kind, during festivals in order to expiate their sins, right? They sinned, but they would, the Sanhedrin, the priests would take the and they would sell them. They would actually sell the animals right there at the temple. I mean, if you had a long way to go, you couldn't bring your animals. So they would sell the animals. So they had behind the altar, they had all these stalls with all these sheep and goats and birds and everything. So people would come and they would give them gold and silver and whatever it was to buy these animals from the priests. The priests would offer them up and just kill them on the temple. The temple, the altar was just a blood bath. It was just the altar was where you put the animal and cut her throat. And so this was when Jesus came along and was throwing everybody out of the temple. You know, that was like unheard of. That was like that was like threatening their livelihood. But underlying that was this idea, I think, of eating the flesh and blood. This idea we won't do that anymore. You know, now that our sins, so we don't have to kill animals. Point, you don't kill animals anymore. So, but then there's, like you say, there's still this underlying idea. Well, you know, I want to eat their flesh anyway. Eat Jesus's flesh. I mean, that, when you think about that, that's pure cannibalism. And of course, there's many traditions before. There's overtones of this with Abraham and his son, that you know, killing his son, that he would kill a lamb instead, so that you know, killing animals, sacrificing animals, was a step up from sacrificing children or other people. But we, you know, the whole idea is to get away from all of that. And I think it's interesting to see that there's a lot of early Christian, that the early Christians would never eat meat, and that there were many Christian movements that thrived over hundreds of years following that would never eat meat. That was their thing. They wouldn't eat meat. But they were persecuted. They were persecuted horribly, as they talk about in the World Peace Diet. You know, there was Emperor Constantine, he let them have their way, and they said, no, it's okay to eat meat. And they would literally torture people to death who refused to eat meat. The church, the early church, would do that. And they did it later with the Bogomils and the Cathars. And they'd go through the villages of Europe, and they were looking, back during the Inquisition, they were looking for people who were not, who didn't go by the true Catholic Church. And those were people like Cathars and the Bogomils. And they would tell them, okay, they'd serve meat. And if they refused to eat it, then they would kill them. So there's this very bizarre suppression of vegetarianism on behalf of, by the Catholic Church, that goes over many, many centuries. And then you have on top of that, then you have these mystical, like the Trappist monks, pretty much won't eat meat at all. They're monks, but they won't eat meat because, I mean, that's part, many of them won't eat meat because that's part of their ascetic practice. And then you have, there was that big split, like the Orthodox Church. My sister and a lot of my family is now Orthodox, and they really honor vegetarians. And most of their saints are known to be vegetarian. They love the animals. They wouldn't eat meat. They have a big thing about not eating meat. So there's this tremendous just tension within all the religions when you have, you know, around eating meat. I mean, it's just huge, and it's not going to go away really until we stop it, essentially, I don't think. And it's sublimated in all kinds of ways, but it's a complete hypocrisy to be stabbing animals and then saying God wants us to do it. God smells and loves to have beside. I mean, you know, God wouldn't have created these beautiful animals capable of feeling pain to have them killed by us, right? I mean, it's such absurdity. Anyway, I don't want to go on here. Does anyone else have any thoughts or questions in the time we have remaining? Sorry for the long answer. Judy. Yes, Judy.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me at all? Okay. I wanted to let Christine know I messaged her, but I don't think she saw it. So I wanted her to contact us, Carol and me, so we could maybe work something out as far as a workshop. So Christine, you could just message me in the chat box as a way to contact you. And then I did put the website of how to find out more about the retreat in the chat box for everybody. So, and then the third thing is I just wanted to chime in on this very interesting discussion that Fred brought up. It's always amazing, that whole crucifixion thing, because Jesus and his Edenite group were against sacrifice. So it makes no sense that he would say that by sacrificing himself, that would forgive sins, and that then they could eat his body and drink his blood. That's just cannibalism, like you said, Will. So there's something really weird about that. Some sort of an implant or something that can't have come from
Jesus.
So, but yeah, that's a fascinating subject to me. Thanks, Fred, for bringing that up.
Thank you, Judy. Yeah, I just want to say one more thing, which is that, the Nazareans, who Jesus was born into, the Nazarene Essenes, they had a very strong tradition that a lot of the scriptures in what we call the Old Testament, right, which is their holy books, were corrupted. And so they had a very, very clear delineation of in the Torah, and the first five books and the prophets. They went through everything and they said, this is not God. This is wrong. This is wrong. They, all the times when in the Old Testament, when God is, wanting to have animal sacrifices, when he's torturing and killing people, when he's doing, there's so many horrible things that God does all the time in the Old Testament. And the Nazareans were saying, basically what they said was that a satanic influence had come in to their religion and had perverted it and had put in a lot of false texts into their scriptures. And so they just denied them. They denied that they were valid. They just denied them. So many of it, so much of the stuff, they just said, it's not true. This is all put in by Satan. And so to fool us, it's all about deception. And so there's a lot of overtones in other traditions as well. Like in the Buddhist tradition, there's the idea of Mara, the deceiver, and that Mara can create texts that maybe look like they're religious in some way, but they're just to deceive you. And they say you have to be like a swan. A swan is an animal that can drink milk with her beak and separate the water from the milk. So she really only wants the water. She doesn't want the milk. She doesn't want the white part. She just wants the water. So this is what they would say, that you have to be like a swan. You have to be able to discriminate falsehood from truth when you read any scripture or any teaching, and don't take in the corruption. Don't take in the deception. Don't take in the part that allows you to be violent. I mean, it's so ridiculous when you think about it. You have a religious or spiritual traditions that are founded by spiritual giants, and then these scriptures accrue that completely go against what they were teaching, that say, well, it's okay to eat animal foods or whatever, go to war or whatever it is, when at a fundamental level that's completely opposed to what they're saying. And this idea that there's a force in the world, and that there's a battle between good and evil, and between truth and falsehood, and that there's a deceiver that's using whatever the deceiver can to harm us, basically. I think in the last year, we've seen that manifesting tremendously. The amount of deception that's just pouring through the mainstream media, and the amount of fear in order to take away people's basic rights and sense of well-being and connectedness with each other and connectedness with nature and health and so forth. We're in the largest, by far the largest, crime against humanity in over 10,000 years right now. We're in the middle of it. And, so this is, a time to really take, to really be swans, to separate the water from the milk. Don't be deceived even by, like, so many vegan doctors, for example. I just, are leading so many people astray, by promoting a very dangerous, deadly vaccine. It could really harm people, and it is harming people. I mean, the VAERS, vaccine adverse reporting system, is already, there's more people have been killed by this vaccine than in just four months in prior 20 years, right? I mean, this is like off the charts, and they're not even reporting it. Only 1% are getting reported. So it's really important, I think, to just be savvy and be aware. And so, we've come to the end of our time, unfortunately, but all these things, I think, kind of go together in terms of our capacity to be effective advocates, to stay healthy, to stay connected to the truth of our true nature, that what we are, our health really comes from the divine sources, and our wisdom comes from the higher levels. And not to be thrown into fear. I just published an article today called Spooks, Hurting Humanity. And the whole idea is whenever people in the past and for the last thousands of years wanted to herd animals, livestock like cows, sheep, goats, other animals, the main way you do it is by spooking them, right? You just scare them. You scare them. They all stampede and they go right into the chute and you cut their throats. You spook them. You spook them because that works. And they would get up on a horse to spook them more easily. They'd get dogs that would spook them. They use whips to spook them. They just whack them, whip them, spook them, and they run where you want them to go. And we're being spooked. That's basically it. We're being spooked. Don't be afraid. Just learn to go to a deeper level where we understand life in a bigger picture in multiple lifetimes, or at least beyond just this lifetime. If we just look at only this lifetime, like this is all there is, we're going to be scared all the time. What we are is eternal, was never born and will never die, and we're here to learn and to contribute and to grow, and ultimately we are undamageable. We're eternal consciousness. So this body is like a set of clothes. It comes and goes, and we take lots of them. But when we understand that, we don't have to have any fear. We can speak our truth and stand up for animals and so forth. And I think this is a great learning. You know, we're all going through, me included. And so I want to thank all of you for kind of combining this this aspect of compassion for animals and spiritual the spiritual adventure that we're on together and with social justice and environmental sustainability and all these things really go together. But ultimately, I think it's about us as individuals doing the inner work. So there's lots of interesting things coming. I hope this does come together in October. Carol is still at Unity Village. She said she's not going to hold it if they require masks and all that kind of stuff. So we have to see what the rules are going to be, if it can actually be held. But if possible, we'll see you then. And Chrissy and other people have mentioned a little bit about the possibility of maybe putting on a meditation retreat where we can all gather at some point this year too. So I'm looking into possible venues for doing that. We've always done it other years. I don't think we should let ourselves be suppressed by all these lies. So we're looking into those things. We'll keep in touch with you about that. So much love to all of you. Thanks again for your wonderful participation and contributions to the vegan movement, to the creating a world of kindness and compassion for all living beings. Like I said, I'm not on my usual computer right now. I can't do the usual things. It's in for repairs, but we are going to be meeting on June third for the satsang. We have, that's a different kind of a thing. It's more of a meditation from 5 to 6 Pacific time, just an hour long. And then on the 17th of June, we'll have our third Thursday again. And if there's anything in between, just please feel free to send me an email. Please look at the resources. I mean, the resources are huge this month. I spend so much time putting those all together. there's a lot of interesting information there. And otherwise, please go forth and multiply the message. And maybe we can all say together in closing our prayer for the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals, which is compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. So let's just say this together. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings
everywhere.
Compassion encircles the earth for all beings
everywhere.
One more time.
Compassion
encircles
the earth for all beings everywhere.
Beautiful. All right. Much love to all of you from me and from Madeline. And go forth and have a beautiful couple of weeks till we see you again. Thanks again for joining us. Much love to you all. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Will and Madeline.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Much love. Thank you.